Throughout this week, I think a number of us have been taking part in the tier fund that Let's Change the Climate Challenge, a way that we can try and care for creation and care for each other. And hopefully we've had a sort of, those who have done it, have had a little bit of a taste of what it's like and what it feels like to live on limited resources. And that's the reality for a number of people around the world today. Now, if you're a little bit confused by Let's Change the Climate Challenge, I've let Stephen, who's our youth worker here at Finney Baptist Church, and Ollie, who he works with, and Ollie works for Canberra Youth for Christ, to try and describe it in their own unique way.
Hello there!
Hello there!
Today is Sunday, which means it's time for one thing and one thing only. What is it, Ollie?
Church!
Church!
Yay!
Well, this is odd. We've never done a Sunday challenge before. The reason is we are taking part in Tier Fund's Change the Climate Challenge,
well,
which
done,
has
Stephen.
6 days worth of challenges, and we've already done day 7, which is sign the petition. So day 1 is adapt your travel habits, which I'm going to take on. Day 2 is use less water. Is that one of the ones that we're both going to do together?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll do day 2 together.
Yeah.
So day 3 is cutting down your electricity use. And Ollie, you're going to take that one on. Now, obviously with a young child at home, you might need to do this a little bit differently. So you're going to still be able to make sure you can feed Rosa.
Yeah, I've still got to look after my daughter. Yeah.
But apart from that, you know, you can't use electricity for a certain amount of period during the day.
Yeah.
So day 4 is change your diet, which is go meat free for a day. Now, I'm quite excited about doing this one. I think you want to do it as well.
So yeah,
we'll both do that one together.
Yeah.
And then day 5 is also stop the waste. So I'm excited to see how we get on with these challenges.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a really eye-opening, insightful time. So church, maybe you feel like you can take on some of these challenges yourselves, and we'd really encourage you to do that.
Mm.
If you want to keep up with our challenges, we will of course be sending them out to small groups, but as well as that, we will be posting them to the FBC Youth and Camberley Youth for Christ Instagrams and YouTube channels. So follow us at camberley.yfc on Instagram,
right.
At Frimley Baptist Youth on Instagram,
yeah.
And then on YouTube, just search for Frimley Baptist Youth or Camberley Youth for Christ,
yeah.
And you will be able to find all of our videos. We'll hopefully see you on our YouTube or Instagrams in the next couple of days.
Let's do this.
Bye.
In talking about the climate challenge, let's first go back to the very beginning, to Genesis chapter 1, in the first few pages of the Bible. We're given the story of creation. Here we have in Genesis 1:28, God blessed them and said to them, "Be fruitful and increase in number, fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the air and the sky and over every living creature that moves on the ground." And then God saw all that he had made, and it was very good. Throughout this chapter, that phrase, "and it was very good," is repeated 5 times in verses 9, 12, 18, 21, and 25. As God created the sea and the skies, the mountains and the birds and the bugs, yes, even the bugs, God stopped and said that it was very good. So God's creation, this planet that we call home, the whole cosmos, is good. Then at the end of the story, after God created us, that's us as humans, the chapter ends there with verse 31. And God saw that it was very good. So you and me and all humanity and creation together, we're all very good. We are made in God's image. Just look around at each other. You can do it. You are all very good. Now, there may be a few slight blemishes here and there. There may be a lack of hair for some of us. But in God's sight, we were all created very good. So God's story, or our story, the story of everything begins with goodness. God didn't make a bad world. But somehow sin and wrongness, if that's a word, have become, and they've become a stain upon the fabric. It's not the fabric itself. If we look in the Psalms, the heavens declare the glory of God. The heavens declare the glory of God. The sky proclaims the work of his hands. Day after day, they pour forth speech. Night after night, they display knowledge. There is no speech or language where their voice is not heard. Their voice goes out into all the earth, their words to the ends of the world. That's how David describes creation in the Psalms. It's a beautiful picture. And I thought, talking about beautiful pictures, a beautiful picture. Now, maybe you've sat at the top of a mountain. Hopefully not when there's a blizzard blowing, but you've enjoyed that just majestic sight. You've gazed at the ocean. And for me, that's the very best place to be, is actually gazing and looking over the sea. Or you've looked up into the night sky and just been amazed at what you've seen about the stars and the planets. Possibly you've had the opportunity to go snorkeling or diving, and you've just seen the wonderful colours of all those sea life. Or maybe, hopefully all of you, you've been in awe of a sunset, or you get up very early, a sunrise. So you'll be aware that this is a great world. It's a God-glorifying world, a world that shouts about his beauty, his power, and his splendor through the magnificence of creation. What a great story. So what's gone wrong? Well, the goodness of this world, or the fruitfulness of it, depends upon relationships. God's creation is relational. We're all interconnected. The relationships between us and creation, there's relationships between us and each other, and of course, there's a relationship between us and God. Now, if these relationships thrive, then we thrive. And creation thrives. But that hasn't always been the case, has it? Beginning with the fall, these relationships have been bruised and indeed broken. And after a recent fall from my bike at speed, I know what it's like to be a little bit bruised and to be a little bit broken. And it's not very nice. So that delicate balance between keeping all things in harmony has been tipped in favour of greed and selfishness and pride. And as humans, I think we like to think that we can go it alone. We like the idea of being independent of each other, that this world exists for my benefit and not for the glory of God. And many of us know what happens when relationships get broken. People get hurt. And I think this world is hurting. That much is quite clear. And the climate crisis is the latest in a series of significant symptoms pointing to how our broken relationships with creation and with each other have become. Now, I'm sure that a number of you have read a lot about the climate crisis. You've read reports or you've seen stories on the TV. The recent report was saying that, and again, with all these reports, I know that there's a lot of assumptions that go into them, and not everybody always fully agrees with these assumptions, but a fairly reputable report suggests that within the next 30 years, maybe around 1 billion people could be forced from their homes because of the climate crisis. So that's 1 in 7 of the world's population having to leave everything behind. And I think it's agreed by most of us that the climate crisis is causing storms to become more powerful and floods and droughts to become more severe, destroying people's crops, their homes and communities. And even at times, the air that we breathe is at risk, particularly in certain parts of the world. So maybe we need to cry out, Lord, have mercy on us. Because it's not merely a crisis, it's actually an injustice. Because the people who have done the least to cause the climate crisis, people living in poverty, are the ones who are most at risk. So people's lives are being impacted today. It's happening now. Unfortunately, injustice is everywhere. So what can we do about it? Now, it can all feel a little bit overwhelming, can't it, to try and get our heads around such a huge issue. So where do we start? And I guess I really struggle with that one. You know, where do we start? Because it's a global problem, should it be the governments and big business? Well, yes, but maybe it should be us as well. Because the climate crisis has very human faces. It's affecting people who have real names, who have their own hopes and worries and dreams, whose lives are affected, and they're struggling to survive. This lady is Lorea. She's a mum, and she lives in Burkina Faso in West Africa. And she has a small plot of land, and she tries to provide food for her family and her children. But it's a struggle, and it's been made even more difficult by the climate change in recent years that's begun to have a disastrous effect on the rainfall in that area. And in West Africa, where Lorea lives, a lot of families are living with droughts, and they've become more commonplace with no rain and nothing to eat. And Lorea's story, tragically, is not unique. Millions of people in the most vulnerable communities around the world are facing the same fears as Lorea does, the same worries about how they'll provide for their children as they're being pushed further back into poverty. So we've heard about the problem, but what's the remedy? Well, our God is a redeemer, and there is a solution, and it involves all of us. As we've heard a little bit earlier, God's original perfect purpose for all creation was to have flourishing relationships between God, between humanity, and the wider creation. But he also gave us the power to make choices. Now, in a fallen world, we as humanity have broken those relationships. And yet God does not wash his hands of us and leave us abandoned to destruction. His power and plan speaks redemption after redemption. You read here in Colossians 1, "For God was pleased to have all his fullness dwell in him," that's in Jesus, "and through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether things on earth or things in heaven, by making peace through his blood shed on the cross." The fullness of restoration was made complete in Jesus, but its outworking involves each one of us as we look to Jesus and as we follow him, including those in great need. So we're called to be a change-making church because of our ultimate hope is in God. We're called to work towards the restoration of all relationships between God, between humanity, and the wider creation. In other words, poverty isn't God's plan for us. You are, and we are. We can all play our part. We're told, aren't we, in the Bible, that we're to be salt and light. We together, as Jesus' disciples, can show the world the difference that love can make. Though the climate crisis can seem overwhelming, and we can feel that it's just too big for me to do anything about it, let's take heart from the fact we don't have to face it alone. We can face it as a global movement of Jesus' followers, united in faith, hope, and love. Now, we talked about Lorea earlier, and she's seen firsthand the difference that love can make. Tear Fund and a community with local churches partnered with Lorea and her community, and they empowered them to lift themselves out of poverty. They were giving them some training in sustainable farming. She was also given some chickens and helped how to look after them. And one of the things that Lorea gave her the most joy was knowing that she wasn't alone. She says there, "This help calls me to recognize God's help. I feel loved by those who've contributed to it. I pray that God helps me to succeed in my activity and to be a blessing for my children and for others." Hope is real. hope is alive. Hope for Lorraine to feed her family in a changing climate. That's been said, the action is brought about by bringing together anger and hope. Now, I think we probably have a righteous anger at the way God's creation has been mistreated, at the way that people are suffering. But we also have hope. Hope in the redeeming love of Jesus. Hope in the practical solutions that organisations such as Tear Fund are implementing throughout the world through the local church. So we have anger and we have hope. And hopefully that will lead us into action. Through the Let's Change the Climate Challenge that some of us have been doing this last week, we've seen how everyday actions can take an effort, but they can make a difference. Again, they are difficult, some of them. But this is a Christian scientist. She's involved in climate change, a lady called Catherine Hayhoe. And she says this, climate change is not only an environmental issue. Climate change is a poverty issue. It's an issue of inequality and injustice. It's a human issue. And that's why we care. Maybe you could possibly commit today to taking a few of those lifestyle changes that we've talked about. Maybe forward, not just this week, but the next week and the week after. Adapting your travel habits, using less water, cutting down on your electricity use, changing your diet, stopping the waste, petitioning governments and local authorities and big business, and praying. Not only this, but also engaging the spaces that God has placed us in. So Catherine Hayhoe has also said, the most important thing you can do to fight climate change is to talk about it. A lot of people say that one person can't make a difference. But we're not one person, are we? We are the church. And there's millions, actually billions of us. Each placed by God with our own unique sphere of influence and impact. We all can have an impact somewhere along the line. And it's good that the church is talking about these things now. We tuned into the Baptist Assembly as a church a couple of weeks ago. And they were talking about it there. On the Saturday, a lady called Laura Lee Lovering, who's the Creation Stewardship Coordinator for BMS World Mission, was sharing about the situation in Chad and Mozambique, I think, and it was in Uganda, where there's agricultural economies. And they've really been hit hard by the climate change. But she was sharing some very positive stories about how the church and how communities are making a difference and how things are improving for some of them. At an OMF conference a couple of months ago that a few of us went to, there was a seminar and a workshop on climate change. And I know, so the church is talking. And here at Finney Baptist Church, we have a green team looking at how we as a church can reduce our carbon footprint. The church is talking, which is great. It's important, isn't it, that we're talking? So I don't know if you can read that very clearly. But it's an issue with lots of young people. 9 out of 10 Christian teenagers surveyed are concerned about climate change. So it's a really big issue. And people like Daniel from the youth, and the youth talk about it very openly, and they're doing stuff and moving forward. But only 1 out of 10 think their church is doing enough. So maybe for those of us in a slightly older generation, the challenge is our young people are concerned about it and they're doing something about it. What about me? Are we as a church doing enough? But if all of us make a commitment and use our influence, change can happen. It might seem that we can't do much from where we are to reach those families who are already suffering from the most difficult and the most critical changes in the climate. But the changes that we make in our lives, such as the things we've done this week, potentially can have a profound effect on future generations, on our children and our children's children. and many organisations that we support. Organisations such as Tear Fund, such as the Baptist Missionary Society, and many others have a worldwide network of partners and local churches who are now delivering practical solutions. How can we make a difference to the climate crisis? I guess one way is to support Tear Fund, and they've got the ability to restore an entire community that has been devastated by the climate crisis. Now, Tear Fund's worldwide network of partners and local churches is engaged in delivering practical solutions using new farming techniques, new tree planting, improving waste management, and access to more reliable water sources, right where they need it most. So we have an opportunity to bring some healing back into the world, to be part of God's good solution, to fulfill our calling as the church. Maybe you would consider to be part of our summer missions appeal. Your action could start to make a crucial difference in the lives of some of the most vulnerable people on the planet. So what we're doing is we're launching our summer missions appeal today, and we're going to split the fund between Tear Fund, so you're working particularly in this area with some of the most poor, and also, I'm sure you're aware of the rising costs that are happening to most people at the moment. There's a great need for those who are living locally, and they need our support. So we're going to split it between Tear Fund and BSEM. And just some information about BSEM is their little strapline, a bridge between those that want to give and those who are in need. So let me finish by just going back to the climate crisis. The climate crisis can seem overwhelming. Sometimes we think, it's just too much. But there is hope when we join together as God's people in God's power. We've seen the inequality that exists because of broken relationships. And we've also seen that hope is still very much alive. So we have an opportunity to bring back healing into the world. Let's be part of God's good solution to fulfill our calling as the church and also as the church here in Frimley. Shall I just pray as we finish? God of creation, we humbly ask your forgiveness for all the ways in which we have polluted your land, inspiring us anew a deep love for the world you have made. And give each of us the courage and conviction to take steps, however small, to better look after it. For we ask it in Jesus' name. Amen.